From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. In the Park Slope neighborhood of Brooklyn, there's an eye-grabbing storefront, the Brooklyn Superhero Supply Company, a sign reads, claiming this shop is the one stop for all your foe-battling needs. But the store conceals a secret identity and a secret mission. NPR's Jeffrey Freimanwire paid a visit.
Past mannequins wearing the latest in crime-fighting attire, tucked behind a hidden door, you'll find the secret headquarters of 826 NYC, a mild-mannered nonprofit organization that helps kids with creative writing. There's a spacious room filled with bookshelves, couches, and tables, giving kids from elementary to high school age an inviting place to write and do homework. Classes also come in for field trips, and volunteer Katie Parker says going through the store into the reading room gets kids in the mood to be creative.
I think when you walk into that space, your imagination just kind of explodes. You know, everything seems possible when you're walking through a superhero supply store. And they don't really have time to sit there and think about everything and decide whether it's real or not, so by the time they come back here, anything seems possible.
There are 826 organizations in seven U.S. cities. They get their name from the street address of the first center, started by writer Dave Eggers at 826 Valencia in San Francisco. Each has a whimsical storefront. In Seattle, there's a space travel theme. Chicago's is a top-secret spy store. With a small staff and an army of volunteers, they offer totally free, informal tutoring and help with homework.
The great thing is a kid can walk in there thinking, oh, I'm going to a reading tutorial, and suddenly you're in a place where gravity is sold in cans and you can buy tights and a cape, which I just bought for myself.
Writer George Saunders was one of 23 authors who contributed to a short story anthology called The Book of Other People. It was edited by Zadie Smith and benefited 826 NYC.
In a time when, you know, everyone is bemoaning the decline in literacy, 826 is an incredibly innovative, energetic way to say to kids that language is power.
The 826 sites regularly host school field trips. One recent morning, 19 third graders from PS 250 in Williamsburg were welcomed into the superhero supply store, then taken two by two through a secret doorway into the reading space. First things first, each student dons a pair of Clark Kent-style glasses for an official author photo. The photos are taken, name tags made, and then they all sit on a rug at the far end of the room facing storyteller Katie Parker. She tells them that all of the employees of the Mildew Publishing Company are in a predicament.
And our boss, Mr. Mildew, who is this really gross, scary, stinky guy that lives 17 basements below us, he's our boss. And he makes us write stories. But today we were supposed to all just be able to have a really nice time and write a story. And then last night, right before we all went home, he came on the intercom and he goes, "You guys need to give me 19 original stories by tomorrow at 12:30 or you're all fired."
It's quickly decided that the kids will help the employees get those 19 stories written.
So guys, what do we need for a story? What's the first thing that we need for a story? What are some things?
We need characters.
Characters, yes.
They come up with a list of what you need to tell a story before Mr. Mildew, over an intercom, interrupts them.
We need a setting. We need attention. Oh.
Katie.
Yes, Mr. Mildew?
I see we have some new employees today.
Yes.
Well, I hope for your sake they're good. Because I need my stories by 12:30. Do you understand?
Yes, Mr. Mildew. Okay, all right, so let's come up with the main character.
The kids make all of the decisions by consensus, and the elements of their story start to develop. While one 826 volunteer provides illustrations on a sketch pad and easel, another transcribes the work in progress on a computer, and it's projected onto a screen in the front of the room.
So Ashley and Tony are 15-year-old twins that live in a mansion on a farm in Puerto Rico. Now, do they live with their parents, or do they live alone?
The kids decide Ashley and Tony live with a butler named Henry, along with an oversized fish named Jerry. And one other key plot point?
Tony had telekinesis.
Does everyone know what telekinesis
is? No,
you can use your mind to move things.
Ashley is also telekinetic, which comes in handy when Henry the butler decides he's going to steal money from their safe in the mansion's basement. The story progresses to a cliffhanger moment. Tony and Ashley have levitated Jerry the fish, terrifying the butler, and the police are on their way. But how will the twins explain the situation without giving away the secret of their superpowers? That's for each of the students to decide.
So if everybody comes up with their own original ending, there's a chance that Mr. Mildew will let us keep our jobs.
Okay, guys, so you can separate into these two tables.
The students start busily writing and illustrating their own conclusion to the story. Their teacher, Dana Gerin-Daisy, says she jumped at the chance to bring her students here.
Sometimes with our curriculum, you have to kind of be a little bit more structured. Like, it doesn't really give room for superheroes to come in. So that's why I knew this would be a good outlet for them to kind of go, telekinetic, this, that. I knew that was going to happen.
And Katie Parker says that almost always happens.
Even classes that start out kind of subdued will usually really burst out at some point during this particular workshop and just get crazy and creative, and it's inspiring for us.
The kids finish up their stories, which are then printed and bound with their individual ending and illustration and their own bespectacled author photo on the back cover. Then the stories are gathered up and taken downstairs, where the publisher, Mr. Mildew, will decide whether each story is approved or not.
Crystal. Then Henry said, I will get revenge. A wonderful last line. Approved.
Yay! They've met the deadline, and all the stories have been approved by the reclusive Mr. Mildew. The third graders from Dana Gerin-Daisy's class head back to PS 250, and the morning's volunteers straighten up the room. There's a roster of over 650 volunteers at the Brooklyn 826 location alone who help out in school field trips like this one, special events, and tutoring, fighting for truth, justice, and creativity. Jeffrey Fryman Wire, NPR News.
If you're worried that your children are obsessing over beautiful people splashed across television screens, don't worry. They're admiring the artwork, says essayist Tim Brooks.
When I came downstairs the other morning, the first thing I saw was my 13-year-old daughter Maddie watching a downloaded episode of America's Next Top Model on her laptop. I groaned. I'm not sure which possibility is more disturbing, that she's being sucked into helpless consumerism, or that she's starting down the slippery incline toward self-loathing and eating disorders. But like all parents, I'm in danger of underestimating my teenager. She knows all about anorexia and bulimia. She just did her science fair project on animal testing by the cosmetics industry and left the entire seventh grade ewing and wincing at photos of rabbits clamped in labs, their eyelids pinned back, shampoo burning naked eyeballs. I asked her what she likes about America's Next Top Model. Tyra Banks is really funny, she said. But most of all, she said, she likes watching the way they tackle the challenges involved in the photography. I wasn't entirely convinced, but the next day was Mother's Day, and by chance, I gave my wife a camera. Maddie seized it and began not just snapping pictures, but leaning, bending her knees to find better angles, making shadows fall across faces. Well, all right, I said, shifting ground, but why do you like drawing pictures of fashion models? I like shading, she said. I like drawing wavy hair because it's full of shadows and the shading is what makes it look three-dimensional. I like doing eyes and lips because they're full of tiny lines and the texture is really hard to get right. So there probably is some deep gender stuff going on here. We all love dramas that play out in the realms of our dreams, and girls may be drawn to the mythologies of appearance just as boys may be drawn to the mythologies of sport. It's what they take away from those dramas that matters. Maddie's now working on an acrylic painting based on one of her fashion magazine photos, and she can already depict the subtleties of skin tone better than I ever will. One other thing. The girl in her painting is more interesting than the one in the magazine. Her jawline a little stronger, her complexion less washed out, her gaze more focused. I'd say Maddie's safe from that slippery incline for a while.
Weekend Edition essayist Tim Brooks.
Go.
This is NPR News.
Now, from the Unger Report, a question. Are you going through changes in your life? Maybe a new job, a new relationship? How about just a different toothpaste? Our humorist Brian Unger says you might be evolving.
Oprah Winfrey is on the cover of Black Enterprise magazine this month. Now, you probably remember when she was on the cover back in 1986, and you're asking, hey, Oprah, what has changed since then? Well, the answer, according to Oprah, nothing. In 22 years, Oprah says nothing about her has changed. In Oprah's world, there's still a Camaro in her driveway. Kurt Waldheim is president of Austria, and bacon is $1.75 per pound. Nothing has changed. But what she does say is very interesting. Oprah says, quote, I've evolved. Oprah has evolved right into her brand new, yet-to-be-launched, very own cable TV network called OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network, which is going to be on the air very soon because an hour of Oprah a day is just not enough. So how do we know, or how does Oprah know she's evolving? And what will she look like to archaeologists in 1 million years? When they find petrified Oprah in a forest, will they say, she was very evolved? Is evolving painful? More importantly, who can evolve and who can't? Well, I can tell you that I'm pretty sure I'm evolving too, into a new, more expensive apartment next week. And it hurts. Now, I'm not changing addresses. I'm evolving into a new address because I got robbed at my old address. Two gangbangers standing in my driveway with all my stuff in their van caused me to evolve. Now, Oprah and I are not the only two people who are evolving. Other big names say they have evolved, like Hillary Clinton on gay issues.
Well, I am very much in favor of civil unions with full equality of benefits.
George Bush's reasons for being in Iraq have evolved, or at least mutated. That annoying man on CNBC, Jim Cramer.
He has no idea!
He says he evolved when it comes to buying stocks.
They know nothing!
And the pop singer, Ciara. She says she evolved too. I don't even know who she is, and she's evolved. This is what she sounds like now. And this is what she sounds like 2 seconds later.
Watch me.
Her music actually gets worse the longer you listen to it. That is evolutionary. So next time someone comes up to you and says, hey, you've changed, you say, oh no, I've evolved. Thanks, Oprah. And that is today's Unger Report. I'm Brian Unger.
Speaking of evolved, you can take your Unger with you as a podcast. You can podcast his report as well as this entire show. Go to npr.org/daytoday.
Hi, my name is so-and-so. Baby, can you tell me yours? You look like you came to do one thing. Set it off. I started on the left, then I had to take him to the right. He was out of breath, but he kept on dancing all night.
You try, admit, but you just can't break the feeling inside. You know it, and I can see it in your eyes.
Ciara on Day to Day, a production of NPR News with contributions from Slate.com. I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Madeline Brand.
In New York, a new law took effect this weekend forcing internet retailers to collect sales tax from consumers. Some big web companies are already challenging the law. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
Right now, people who buy things online are required to pay sales tax, but they're supposed to make arrangements to pay it on their own. A Supreme Court decision said that internet companies don't actually have to collect sales tax unless they maintain a substantial physical presence in the customer state. A law signed into effect by New York Governor David Patterson last month would change that. It says any website that collects a fee for referring an internet user to a retailer has to collect 8.75% tax on products sold to state residents. That would include numerous small and large websites and even some blogs. Like other states, New York says it's losing tax revenue because most internet customers don't pay sales tax. The law has already been challenged in court by Amazon. On Friday, Overstock.com filed suit seeking an injunction against the law. It wants it declared unconstitutional. Overstock is based in Utah and says it shouldn't be responsible for collecting New York tax. It also says it's warned its New York-based web affiliates they can no longer refer customers to the site. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.